Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing today?
Good, Jimmy. Good to see you again. Good to hear you again as well, I guess you could say. If you don't know, folks, we can see each other while we record this. So our audio is what you only hear, but we can actually see each other. You can't see us and we can't see you. So good to see you. Good to hear from you. Hope everyone out there is doing well. And we are into June, so it is full summer mode.
It is, and Andy, as you pointed out, they can't see us. We could see each other. What do we have in common? We're both wearing golf shirts.
Yeah, but I wear golf shirts all the time. Like, you only wear golf shirts when you're going to golf. Otherwise, you have a t-shirt on. Let's be honest, you're a t-shirt guy, right? Like, if it's cold, you're wearing a sweatshirt, right? Like, you wear sweatshirts, but you're more of a t-shirt guy. I'm 9 out of 10 days golf shirt guy. And I'll be a sweatshirt as well, but I'll have a golf shirt on underneath it. And occasionally you'll see me in a t-shirt, but not very often. So that means you must be playing golf.
It does exactly that, Andy. It means I'll be heading to the golf course shortly after we're done recording. I hope you will be doing the same thing. It's a beautiful day out, so out for golf will make my day. Let's move on, Andy. You know, it's off season. It's the off season. Not a lot going on. Although this weekend, a big recruiting visit weekend. Hopefully, we'll have some news to talk about from that come next week. But we've been talking about, on this show, the possible expansion of the college football playoffs. We've been talking about congressional bills to clean up college football, control NIL, all of those things. Andy, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of serious topics.
It's laborsome.
How about we have a little bit of fun today, okay?
Let's keep it light and breezy and super easy. How's that?
Let's do exactly that. And a shout out to my buddy Chris Buchanani. A year ago, in 2025, he did something he called it the Penn State All-Century Team. Believe it or not, Andy, we are a quarter away through the 21st century. And he put together his All-Penn State 21st Century Team. I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it. I thought you and I could do something a little bit similar, but different in this way. Where with Chris's group, it was a serious ranking of players. That's all we best. Who was first, who was second, who was third. I'd like to hear who you think are your best players, but also how about your favorite player or clutch player or underrated player? So I thought today we could take a look at the skill positions on offense. We're not going to get into the nitty-gritty of ranking, you know, the left guards for the first quarter century, first quarter of this century. Yeah, okay, there we are. All right, we did it. Vega Ioane is number one. But let's look at the skill positions. Let's rank them. And as always, Andy, we start at the quarterback position. Where else? Let me give you a quick rundown of the quarterbacks from the 21st century at Penn State, starting with Zach Mills, 01 through 04. Then it was Michael Robinson, Darrell Clark, Matt McLoyne, Christian Hackenberg, Trace McSorley, Sean Clifford, and Drew Aller. Kind of an interesting mix that you have there. Let's start, Andy, with who do you think, who was the best among the Penn State quarterbacks this century?
A bit of an underwhelming position, in my opinion, not some very high end recruits, but nothing exceptional. A lot of experience. So when you look at this, you come to realize that for basically this whole quarter century, Penn State has had serious stability at the quarterback position. Like, these are 2 and 3 year starters. You know what I mean? Multi-year starters, 3 years. I mean, it's not like they had a one and done or a 2 year starter or one, you know, just a senior who waited his turn. These were all, I would say, in college football, not by today's standards, but overall, they have longevity. They were long-term starters. So, I mean, who was the best? I think it has to be Trace McSorley, right? He was the most dynamic, not necessarily the most talented or the best, you know, by the measurables quarterback, not even close, had like pretty much every intangible in the book, and he won. He won football games. He won football games on his own accord. You know what I mean? Like, he carried this team. Now, he's not the only player out there, but the way he played the game inspired and carried this team to the teams between 15 and 18. More wins than he should. Big Ten championship, won the Big Ten title. How about those deep balls in the Big Ten championship game, right? Like, so.
Saeed Blacknall.
The Iowa game, right? Like, the Rutgers game. Remember when they had nothing going on against Rutgers? You're like, oh my gosh, are they going to lose this game? And so, I just think he was the all around the best quarterback, and I don't even know that it's up for debate.
I agree. I think that's the best call. You brought up an interesting point about the stability of the position, especially in the James Franklin era. If you think about it, he inherited Christian Hackenberg. Right. Then McSorley, multi-year, Clifford, multi-year, Drew Aller, multi-year. Essentially, James Franklin had three quarterbacks from the point where Trace McSorley took over. Till Drew Aller. So there was stability there. But what's interesting is there's not a first round NFL draft pick among this group, is there?
Oh, not even. I mean, there's a couple first round talents. Christian Hackenberg and Drew Aller had every measurable in the book to be NFL first round caliber talent players. They just, for very different reasons, had successful but somewhat underwhelming college careers. So I'm going to give you my Christian Hackenberg opinion. Nobody on this list gave more to the Penn State program, gave themselves more to the Penn State program than Christian Hackenberg. That was a very difficult time. They weren't very good either, right? They weren't very good.
Especially on the offensive line.
Right. They had limited numbers. He had no protection. And he made a lot of chicken salad, Jimmy, out of chicken you know what. And, you know, he's sort of like, he was loyal. He loved the school. You know, et cetera, et cetera. All those things you wanted him. He, as a quarterback, he had what I call, you know, QB PTSD. He got his head down, and that's from getting hit so much because his offensive line was truly horrible. As bad as Drew Aller had it at the receiver position for his career, right? The wide receiver position was a shipwreck followed by a train wreck for Drew Aller. It was even worse, I think, for Christian Hackenberg in terms of the offensive line. I think both those guys had NFL first round talent tools. It didn't pan out that way for them career wise.
It did, and you pointed out correctly, the offensive line with Christian Hackenberg, the receivers with Drew Aller, but I probably don't look back as fondly with Christian Hackenberg as you do. I think both Christian Hackenberg and Drew Aller were underwhelming in their performances on their own, that they are guilty of that. And it's fascinating that the two most talented quarterbacks of this group, physically talented, big guys, big strong arms, were probably the most underwhelming of this group. And what I find interesting is it's, you know, a Trace McSorley, Penn State, the only ones who wanted him as a quarterback. He excelled. I want to point out two other quarterbacks that were two of my favorites, Andy, and I'm not going to, you know, claim that they should have been number first round draft picks in the NFL, but both I thought very good college quarterbacks in Michael Robinson and Darrell Clark. And I think they're both a bit underrated. They're both very good college quarterbacks. And I think, especially Michael Robinson, I think he had the ability to put the team on his back, will them the victory. And remember, they had, in 2005, they lost the one controversial game to Michigan, which it's unfortunate Michigan won on the last second touchdown, because Michael Robinson had this wonderful clutch touchdown drive. He willed them down the field, scores the go-ahead and touchdown with less than a minute to go, and Michigan was able to come back and score. I think that took away quite a bit of the legacy for Michael Robinson.
So I think when you go up and down this list of skill players, Jimmy, the most talented and complete overall football player, not singularly talented, the most complete overall football player, Michael Robinson, bar anybody on this list. Michael Robinson could... He proved it in the NFL, right? He became an H-back, a fullback, a tight end. You know what I mean? He could be an emergency quarterback. Michael Robinson could have played safety or outside linebacker in the NFL.
And remember, he did some of those other things at Penn State prior to getting the starting role. Yep. He did those things while Zach Mills was there. Okay, so very talented football player. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter number one and the quarterbacks. Guess what? When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the other positions right after this.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show, and we're having a little bit of fun today. We are looking back at the players who were on this 21st century Penn State football team at some point. We're taking a look at the skill positions. Quarter one, we looked at quarterback. Both agreed Trace McSorley was the best of the group. Christian Hackenberg, Drew Aller, similarly, were probably big-time five-star talents, never quite lived up to that while at Penn State, even though it wasn't all their fault. There was extenuating circumstances for both of them. But let's move on to other positions. Andy, let's go with running back. And let me read through the list. This is a really good list, by the way, Andy.
More meat on the bone here. I said the quarterback position was the least dynamic. I think the running back position goes in the top. It's supremely well deep.
Let's look at it. Starting with Eric McCoo, Larry Johnson, Tony Hunt, Evan Royster, Saquon Barkley, Miles Sanders, Journey Brown, Nick Singleton, and Katron Allen, two players who just finished up their Penn State careers. I think, Andy, we're going to have the same answer to this question. Well, maybe not. Who's the best of the lot here?
The best running back, pure running back of the group it's clearly Saquon Barkley. You can't say he's not the best. You just can't. You can make cases and arguments around it, but they're all spokes on a wheel. They're not interchangeable parts. It's not like you think tomato and you say tomato, I say tomato. There are compelling cases to be made, but at the end of the day, all roads lead back to Saquon Barkley. He's just too good.
He was dynamic. He was gifted. He kind of proved it with his position in the NFL draft, with his NFL career, especially his season that he had with the Eagles. But, you know, you say there could be arguments around the periphery of it, Andy. Give me one of those arguments.
Larry Johnson had the single greatest season of any running back in Penn State history. In Penn State history. The greatest single season ever. And I would make a compelling argument that between the tackles, he had popped to the outside, but between the tackles, he was a better pure runner than Saquon Barkley. He took on contact better. He made guys miss better. Saquon was not great other than jumping over people, which is freak stuff, right? Like, Saquon was not great at that sort of 2 to 3 yard making one person miss. You know what I mean? He could run somebody over, but he wasn't great at making somebody miss. I think in tight spaces, Larry was a more complete and better running back in that aspect than Saquon Barkley. And I would argue and say the single greatest. And I know you go back, there's a long list of them, right? You have a Heisman Trophy winner. You've got Franco Harris, right? You got Lydell Mitchell. There is some strong, strong old school history at the position. No matter what, Larry Johnson is the GOAT in terms of one season complete. And he only kept building as the season got longer. Somehow he got better and stronger, and they used him more.
So I think that's the single greatest season ever. That's a compelling case. However,
okay, we had a little technical glitch there with your mic. I think you're back and good now. You talk about that Larry Johnson season. I'm not sure I'm willing to concede anything from Saquon Barkley to another back. But with that said, Andy, that 2002 season that Larry Johnson had, and remember, he had to split carries with other people prior to 2002, so he didn't have the chance to have the same kind of longevity and number of carries and be the number one guy for multiple years. But I also think he had Saquon suffered also from an offensive line that was at the very least inconsistent, and he had to deal with that. And we saw in his NFL career, you know, he went frying pan to fire with the New York Giants offensive line in the NFL.
Right. Yep.
Then when he finally got an offensive line that matched his talent, we saw magic on the Philadelphia Eagles. And we saw what Saquon Barkley could truly be about. And I'm saying that, and I want to do it in a way, though, that takes nothing away from that 2002 season and Larry Johnson. if you weren't around to watch that, he was very special, Andy.
It was jaw-dropping as it built, right? And then the crescendo of it was head-shaking. That's the kind of season it was. And, when they were in games, 9 and 10, and towards the end there, you were like, can he keep doing this? How is he going to keep doing this? And it not only did he keep doing it, he kept doing it better.
Well, it looked like, Andy, I believe the last game of the year, that game against Michigan State, it looked like he could have run for like 500 yards.
They ran the same play because they couldn't stop it. And they couldn't stop him. And, there's the famous story where Joe told Fran, just keep running the same play. They can't tackle him.
Exactly. Why and why not? I think that's a good call that we have to recognize Larry Johnson's 2002 season. After we talk about Saquon Barkley and we talk about Larry Johnson, especially that big year in 2002, there's a lot of names out here. We have people like Evan Royster who had the career rushing record until, Catron Allen this past season. We had Journey Brown, who unfortunately his career cut short. Who do you like among the rest of the group, Andy?
Where does the dynamic duo fit in? I mean, they're fresh off of the, Singleton and Allen, they're fresh off of being done. They haven't even started their NFL careers, basically. But I mean, as a duo, Jimmy, I don't know. They spent their careers sort of, they were always two different backs, but they ended up being dynamic when Penn State needed them most, each of them at different times. You know what I mean? They were consistent right the way through. You know what I mean? And I think over time, what that duo did, sharing the football, right? Like, that's the hardest part. How do you share that football with each running back being that dynamically talented in different ways, albeit? You don't. You don't try and make one an RB1 and one an RB2. You make them both an RB1 and figure it out. So I like the devil in the details of Singleton and Allen together. I like the way they picked up blitzes and pass blocked, right? I like the way they supported each other all throughout their careers. They never looked at each other as taking my job competition type. They always saw each other as a complement to what each knew they already were. That's unusual, Jimmy. Let's be honest. I mean, this is a cutthroat business. You want to be out there. You're an elite athlete. And yet they managed to navigate that without ever creating a minefield. More special than you might think. So I think as you add a little bit of time to the dynamic duo's legacy, I think it's only going to grow because of I don't think you're ever going to see that again, at least in our lifetime. Now we're on the wrong side of it now, but I don't see that happening again. It's so unusual.
Well, I'm not as much as you thinking it's impossible to happen, because I think they are an example of why it's good that you can split the running back position. You could keep them from getting too much wear on the tread, and they still have something left. You could still give them each the ball quite a bit, and we learned that. However, I'm not sure the coaching staff got the best out of either one of them. And it was such a sour finish to their careers that taints it a bit. That final season where they both chose to come back, It was such a surprise. A lot of people felt this could be a national championship season. The talent was there, Andy, and the entire team underwhelmed. Now, I'm not sure, you know, you can put the blame on a lot of different places for it, but as a group, I think that failing is going to taint their legacy.
Huh. No, yeah, that's an interesting, I don't say, oh, Jimmy, you're wrong. I don't think they get held accountable for that, because I don't think their play wasn't responsible for Penn State falling off the planet. They didn't help the situation, but they're not. Yeah, I'm processing it. That's a tough one.
Well, let me put this out there. If they had met, if the team had met expectations in that final year of theirs, I think they would have been all-time legends at Penn State. Yeah. That it was the opportunity that was there, but it didn't come to fruition.
Maybe those two were the epicenter of James and Andy not being able to drive a fully loaded V8 car. Those two were it. They're the epicenter.
All right. That'll be the final word, Andy, in quarter number two. Coming up, your questions, and we ask Andy.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. We know what that means. You got questions? Andy's got answers for us. So let's get right to it, Andy. And let's start with Joe in Scranton, who says, I agree with you on this year's recruiting by Matt Campbell, maybe behind James Franklin's. Franklin is a good recruiter, but he never signed any big-time receivers or defensive linemen. Do you think Matt Campbell will do much better in that area? Also, you can get all the good recruits, but Franklin can't coach, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, one of the large contingent of not a fan of James. James is a great recruiter, Joe. Not a good one. He's a great one. He's great at that. He is elite at that. I think we have to learn about Matt Campbell because this is his first time in the Blue Blood arena. We don't know, can he get 4 and 5 star kids? It's too early because he was put in a bad position by his athletic director. So he's not in a good position to give us any information for at least this cycle and possibly one more. I'm sorry. He's so far behind. He was put so far behind that the catch up is going to be difficult. He will start, I think, after this season, after he has a product to display and talk about, as it being Penn State, not just Matt Campbell and my philosophy and what I did at Iowa State. He needs a Penn State product to show. Once he puts that and lays some of that down and you get to know what it is, let's see him start dipping into that 4 and 5 star realm and what Penn State looks like under his guidance and leadership as the head coach in the recruiting circles. Right now, we don't know enough. And I understand you're asking about positions that James struggled at. I think it needs to be holistically, you know, more clarified first before you can start getting down to the nitty-gritty of position by position. So I have a funny feeling that Matt will do is going to approach. His approach will be different, but I think in say, I would say in 3 to 5 years, I think he will be able to produce similar results. Right.
It's going to be interesting to see, Andy, because the narrative is Matt Campbell at Iowa State overachieved with these three-star guys. Overachieving at Iowa State looks a lot different than overachieving at Penn State. And so far with this recruiting class, you know, Penn State is ranked in the top 10, but that's more about quantity than quality. That's based totally on stars. So yep. You have this, and it's why, you know, you criticized me for always looking at the quarterback position, but that's the hot headliner everywhere. And in this recruiting class, Penn State and Virginia Tech, Matt Campbell and James Franklin went head to head, and James Franklin got the 4-star quarterback and Matt Campbell got the 3-star quarterback. That's the microcosm of what's going on between the two and their recruiting. Now, in the end, will Matt Campbell's 3-star quarterback outperform James Franklin's 4-star quarterback? It will be interesting to see. But you have an interesting take on this, that they're getting to that. Will Matt Campbell get to that point? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, over the course of this time as Matt Campbell's building, here's the one thing I do know. Matt will not, because of the finances, Matt won't overpay. James will. We know that. That's one thing I think that Matt has going for him. He's not going to crazy spend to get himself in the ring. He just won't step in there.
He's going to be prudent with his dollars and cents, yeah. how he spends the money, and we'll see in the end how that will work out. Correct. All right, let's get to, let's stick with that idea, how they spend money. John from Tyrone says, does Penn State have the funds to compete for 5-star and high 4-star recruits? Right now, that doesn't seem to be the case.
They do. No, they do. They are a well-resourced organization. Last year proved the heights at which the resources can go, right? The last year's team. That proved in this era of college football, John, what assets are available. It was the max. They maxed out the credit card. Let's just, you know, to use a term that everyone's familiar with. They went to the max. They maxed it out. They have the resources available. They don't need to spend at that level right now because they're not there. But if they need to spend at that level, they do have the ability to access resources at that level for sure. I believe that. And that's where we go back to Matt's not going to overspend.
Yeah. Andy, I do believe they have a good amount of money to spend. I mean, they're in the Big Ten, they're in the league. Do. They bring in 100,000 fans. I think, though, they probably don't have stupid money.
Correct. Okay?
You know, like, and I think that we know who those teams are that have the stupid money, and they'll overspend even for players. And at some point they do it, it's almost like a vanity purchase. Now, I'm probably been picking on Chaz Coleman on this show a little too much, but it seems pretty evident Tennessee went out and overspent for this player. They went above and beyond. Like, Ohio State apparently was not willing to go where Tennessee was. And now Tennessee is living with that decision. And it doesn't appear to be a great decision. There's going to be a lot of that happening in college football, Andy. You know, you spend on the shiny new toy, as you like to say. I get enamored with it. The shiny toy. Sometimes you could overspend with that also.
Penn State's not going to spend like Texas Tech. They're just not going to do that. They have the resources if they wanted to kind of be crazy like that, but it's simply not going to be the case because they don't have to.
I think they're going to spend smartly. I think they're going to distribute the money everywhere because they're, and this is reality, Andy, some of the teams spending the money on those very top elite guys, they're missing out on that next level of player because they're getting tapped out on the high end. Now, you mentioned Texas Tech. They were a team that was not going to compete for national championships or compete for the playoffs. Well, they now are. Yep. They were in a position where they needed to spend that money to get into that neighborhood. And they successfully did that, and good for them. All right, we got kind of a common theme going on here, but let's stick with it. Bill from Millersburg says, with quarterback, running back, tight end, wide receiver, manned by Iowa State guys, can we expect a good Big Ten offense when it wasn't really a very good Big 12 offense?
I don't think it was a bad Big 12 offense. I think it was a very average, acceptable offense. I don't expect this offense to be bad. I don't expect it to be dynamic. I don't expect it to be 33 to 37 points a game. But I expect it to... Here's what I'll tell you. Let's just call it what it was. Penn State's offense last year was dysfunctional, despite all the talent, right? All of it, dysfunctional. I don't expect under Matt and this coaching staff and the OC, I don't expect dysfunction, particularly in year one. I expect functionality, but don't expect, you know, Bill, don't expect functionality. It depends on what your expectation is, Bill, but I think it'll be functional, but it's not going to be exceptional on any level.
Andy, I'm glad. I'm really appreciate the way you put that. It'll be functional versus dysfunctional. It probably doesn't have the highest ceiling in the world, I think it has a pretty high floor. I think they'll do the things where, you know, it's third and two. They'll do what it takes to get that first down successfully. And I don't think they have, you know, all those five-star players like essentially Penn State had a year ago. But as you put it, it was dysfunctional. I don't think we'll see that dysfunction with this year's team. Okay, let's see. Where will we go from here? All right.
Three. We got one more.
How about this from Mark from Wilmington? I know much of the optimism about this team is based on the crazy easy schedule. But is it just possible that this might just be a playoff caliber team we're going to see this year?
No. No. They don't have a top 100 player in college football on the roster. Not a single one. That is, at its core, that is not a team built to be a top 12 team and a college football playoff team in the country. However, I will tell you this, Mark and Wilmington, at using the 80-20 rule. Okay, so they're short on that. They're the 20% on the pure high-end talent side. Flip the script. They have the 80% schedule. That, you see the balance? So if this team overperforms just a little bit, there is potential based on that, because it's equal, that they could be, they have a 50-50 chance of being a playoff team, because what they're short on in one realm, they equally balance it with in the other one. They're short on the elite talent and top 100 players on their roster, can't find one, but they have that easy schedule, equal balance, Jimmy, so that gives them, if they overperform just a little, a fighting chance.
I'm hoping, Andy, that this is a team, and I'm going to compare it to last year's team that had more stars, more top 100 players, as you put it, but they had glaring flaws. As much talent that was on the offensive line, they woefully underperformed. The wide receivers weren't good, as you remind me over and over again. This quarterback, five-star talent, prone to making mistakes at the worst time. I don't think you'll have those problems. I think the offensive line will perform better. I think the wide receivers will be better. I think this quarterback does not have near the arm that Drew Aller had, but I don't think he'll make the same kind of mistakes. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter three. Another segment to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We've been looking at the different skill positions from Penn State over the last quarter century. For the 21st century, we reviewed quarterbacks, we've reviewed running back. Let's look at the receivers, Andy. First the wide receivers, then the tight ends. Let me give you the quick history. And for those of you who don't remember beyond the last couple of years, there actually were some good wide receivers at Penn State. Let's go through the list of our top candidates, starting with Bryant Johnson, Tony Johnson, Derek Williams, Deion Butler, Jordan Norwood. That was a triumvirate there, Andy, that were pretty good. Derek Moy, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, Deshaun Hamilton, KJ Hamler, Jahan Dotson, and Parker Washington. You'll notice there's no receiver on my list from the last couple of years. Andy, not a bad list of wide receivers. You got one that you say sticks out is the best of the group.
Yeah, it's for me, it's Chris Godwin.
I think you just say that because he plays on your NFL team.
Maybe. I'm not going to deny it. I'm like, maybe. But, you know, I remember, like, okay, so Allen Robinson has to be 1A, right? Like, it's those are your two.
Yes.
Those are your two elite receivers, right? And Allen Robinson has, in many ways, carved out a great NFL career. It had more longevity, but it kind of resembled his college career, right? Good, great in spots, and longevity, consistent. I remember watching Chris Godwin. You could see, like, Allen was pretty much an elite receiver for Penn State pretty much from the jump. Chris Godwin was more build. And at the end of it, I think what the value of Chris Godwin was to the overall, what was going on for Penn State between those in that time in 14, 15, 16 and et cetera, Big Ten championship, his value was nearly doubled. And it was like the little things. And it was before that. Remember, we would be doing the show. We go back that far. We would be talking. I'd be like, just watch him block. I don't care about the catches and stuff sometimes. I'd be like, I just want to watch the guy block. Running plays or, downfield on pass plays. He just works. He works so hard at his craft that he gets way more mileage out of the actual God-given talent that he has. To me, that's the difference maker. That's why I put him first.
I agree. You know, I want so badly to debate you, Andy, and disagree, but I can't. Love Chris Godwin, but I'm with you too on Allen Robinson. There was some, you know, he made enough special plays. Special. Yeah. That's a special moment. Okay.
Yeah, that's iconic.
Yes, and those are the kind of things that, you know, it goes into your memory bank, and you're not even concerned about some of the other things that went on. So you gotta throw that in there. I'm gonna throw in, and it's hard for me to separate, say Derek Williams, Deion Butler, Jordan Norwood, who came in, you know, around the same time, in the same time frame. And it's almost like the Nick Singleton, Catron Allen. You almost have to treat them as a group where, you know, Derek Williams came in so highly regarded, and Deion Butler was this guy who came in out of nowhere to be pretty special. But I almost want to treat them as a group. And you also have to remember that 2005 season when things were going so poorly for the program and Joe Paterno. And they came in, and there's some context to what they did.
Yeah, because it was dark days at Penn State during that time, and they were a bright, shining light on what during, I would say, what was like 2004 to 2006, maybe even into those were some pretty dark days for Joe and the program. It was, there was a lot of stuff going on, and a lot of it was behind, you know, the Wizard of Oz curtain. But, and, you know, the fans knew it. They could feel it. You could taste it. They wanted to get rid, the university wanted Joe out, et cetera, et cetera. And these three guys sort of came in and kind of made you forget that for a good while. And they were a unique trio because the most talented one wasn't the best one. And probably overtly the least talented one, which was Deion Butler, proved to be the best one of the three.
Yes, yes. And it was an interesting group. But again, in my head, I remember them together, you know, which is the way I think we'll remember Catron Allen and Nick Singleton. Here's a question for you as we're on the receivers.
Sure.
More recent history, but not these last couple of year teams. Deshaun Hamilton, KJ Hamler, and Jahan Dotson. Give me your pick among those three.
Jahan Dotson, by far. Thrust into a role that nobody thought he was capable, which was he was the wide receiver one his final year, right? Like he had to be. They really literally had nobody else, right? He was changed schools, originally committed to UCLA, wasn't, came in, was good, okay, in a secondary role. He fit that role well. Did not tell you that he had any wide receiver one in him, and then he just goes out and becomes an elite wide receiver one at the college level. Every time he needed to ascend into a role as a receiver, he was a chameleon and made himself fit. A lot harder to do than you might think. Really, really good. For me, it's him for nine different reasons.
That's a pretty good call. The other two, though, KJ Hamler, Deshaun Hamilton. KJ Hamler was just so exciting. Okay.
Explosive. Just a live wire. Powder cake.
Memorable moments. Memorable moments he gave you, which made him interesting. All right, Andy, we've got one more position to go. This is like my favorite position, okay? The tight ends. And yes, love this group. And, well, let's go through them real quick, all of them. Tony Stewart, John Gilmore, Andrew Corliss, Jesse James, Mike Gesicki, Pat Freiermuth, Brenton Strange, Theo Johnson, Tyler Warren. Now, I think we're both in agreement on who the best of the group is, right?
It has to be Tyler Warren. It has to be. There's cases to be made. Jimmy, this is NFL draft pick after NFL draft pick after NFL draft pick. It's draft pick, draft pick, draft pick, draft pick, right? And do you find an NFL bust in that quarter century? Like a true, like he just didn't have a good, didn't do anything in the NFL.
No, there's a lot of very good, there's a lot of very good NFL players here.
None of them went to the next level and you know, overtly underperformed where you're like, he was good in college, but he never showed up in the NFL. No, there's not one here that you could say, you know, they were all impactful, which is, everyone talks about running back you. I'm sorry, the longevity, tight end you. That's 25 years worth, Jimmy. Bang.
Yes, it's one good one after another. Now, wide receivers, you regularly play three of them at a time, at tight end, we're seeing at Penn State, you could play multiple tight ends. And by the way, with Matt Campbell, we're going to continue to see that, okay?
Correct.
With the talent they have there, and I don't think it hurts that the new offensive coordinator is also the tight ends coach, and he brought multiple really good ones with him from Iowa State, and oh, by the way, he kept Andrew Rapoyer here, a very good one already at Penn State. But yeah, you got to say Tyler Warren. After that, though, Andy, I'm having trouble deciding on a number two.
Yeah, I'm a Mike Gesicki guy. You know, couldn't catch the ball, make the easy catches look easy. To sort of as a tight end became what you talked about earlier in that KJ. He became electric.
Jimmy, oh, yeah.
He just became an electric. How you go from a guy who can't catch a 6 yard square out consistently, and he did, he fixed it. That's a big thing to do, Jimmy, to then becoming electric at that level. He's still in the NFL today, right? Like 10 years later, he's still in the NFL.
Do you know what, Andy, real quick, I just want to interject. I'm glad you brought that up about Mike Gesicki, because since his career here at Penn State, anytime there's a wide receiver that has a case of the drops, I always remind people of Mike Gesicki. It's not necessarily a permanent situation, okay, that they'll always be dropping passes. Mike Gesicki really did overcome that.
Yeah, he overcame it and then not only became reliable, he demanded that defenses account for him at that next level. That's like crossing six bridges to get across one river. That's unbelievable to go that far in that, you know, in that sort of time frame. So yeah, he had all the the athletic assets. And then the last one I want to give you, I think the most creatively, stupidly simplistic, and I say stupidly jokingly, the most simple, simplistic tight end on this group is Pat Freiermuth. Just your basic, simple, available route running catches it. Available route running catches it. That's it. Simple.
Andy, you just decided to steal my thunder. I love Pat Freiermuth. Love Pat Freiermuth. Loved how he even was so proud when he'd run people over, too. Love that attitude.
Just as simple as the day is 24 hours. Nothing next level athletic or elite about him. Creatively simplistic, because he is what is outstanding at the little craft that he was gifted with. Love that. Love players like that.
I'm with you. Big, big, big Pat Freiermuth fan. All right, Andy, that is going to be it for our show. Went way too fast today. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you for tuning in. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform, giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.